welcome to this 11 a.m. workshop. And the purpose of the workshop today is to review the progress of the historical restoration of the courthouse by Bailey Architect. Gerald, do you want to proceed? Oh, okay. That's it. Good to go. Yes, sir, we're going to record it.
Nope. Okay, start over. Okay, we're at about the 65% completion stage in preparing the construction documents for what we call the phase three of the courthouse restoration. This work includes the entire exterior of the building, from the basement through the 14th floor for masonry and the windows. We've been, I guess you've seen us out taking things apart lately. We're doing materials testing on a number of things. We've had a crew out recently disassembling some of the aluminum windows so that we could see how they were installed back in 1980 to try to clearly indicate to the contractors how to remove them. We also believed from some of the 1980 drawings that some of the original 1930 steel frames were still in place within those 1980 windows, and we found that yes, indeed, they still are. But there's not much steel left to them. They're pretty well corroded, which is another thing we need to learn so that we can get those things removed and all of that ferrous metal removed from the walls so it does not create further corrosion problems in the future. So that was a very helpful helpful day's work. Today there's a masonry crew out here on the northeast side of the building, and they started a sampling of cleaning of the various masonry materials, the brick, limestone, and the red sandstone at the bottom. The point of that, of course, is twofold. The first is to see that our normal specified cleaning process using simply a low-pressure warm water will adequately clean these various masonry materials. The second is to get to a more original color on these various materials so that our newly specified replacements where we have to will match the original stuff. One thing they'll also do today are remove several samples of these masonry pieces, limestone, sandstone, and some brick so that we can have them tested to determine their physical characteristics, again, so that the materials that will be chosen to replace the damaged material will be a match, or as close of a match as we can make today. A part of that process was finding sources for these various materials. Obviously, 75, 80 years ago, things came from manufacturers or providers that are no longer around. And one of the materials that is, I think, the most sensitive to that is the red sandstone that's on the base or the basement of the building. We learned back in the master planning process that material came from quarries outside of Colorado Springs that were owned by the Beaumont oil man, Miles Frank Yount. Mr. Yount got his fortune in the second Spindletop strike in the 1920s. And he apparently had other interests beyond oil. But he had a summer house outside of Colorado Springs that in a small town called Manitou Springs, which was established in the 1880s as a resort around the mineral springs, which come out of the ground naturally bubbly. And the springs are still there, and it's strange tasting water, but it is carbonated, which is interesting. His house is still there. This is Mr. Yount's summer house in Manitou. It's now a bed and breakfast. And when we went up to look for stonework, we stayed in his house, in his bedroom, and in his dining room and wherever. So there's been some nice connections trying to find the replacement stone. We have learned that the quarry that he owned in one of the passes going up to Pike's Peak is no longer accessible, but there are some other quarries on the same pass that are still being excavated. And we found a source in Colorado Springs of the same sandstone. These are the chips off the courthouse which I took along. And this is one of those chips on top of one of the blocks that have come from these nearby quarries. And this one provider has and you probably can't even see the chip on top of this piece. And this provider has tons and tons of this material. So I think we have found a suitable replacement for the sandstone. And surprisingly, the price is almost ridiculously cheap. Up there, they use it for landscape rock, and it's almost given away. Most of the expense will just be getting it here and getting it cut to fit into the building. So I think that's one puzzle, or one piece of the puzzle that's been solved. Another kind of tangent to that, of course, this is the brick that's on the courthouse. It has about a four-color blend. And when I was up there, I saw a building in the town of Manitou Springs which has the same brick. And so we're currently trying to track through some of the brick providers in that area to see if maybe that brick also came from that area and might have been another connection through Mr. Yount of providing materials for the courthouse in 1930. We've not found anything in the court records yet to say if he was just the connection or if he in fact donated these materials to the building. But that would be an interesting thing to to add to the historical record. We are working through right now a couple questions and concerns with the windows with the Texas Historical Commission. I mean, we know what the attitude is towards these folks, given their opinion about the courthouse and its connection to the new courthouse. But frankly, we still need to keep them in the loop and try to accommodate their concerns as much as we can. We are taking advantage of this extra phase to be able to get a much closer analysis of the steel windows up in the jail section. And that's been one of the discussion points with the THC about keeping the jail bars in all the windows. And I think we've come close to a resolution of that with, we need to remove all the jail bars and all the window hardware, most of which is broken, so that we can actually get to the windows themselves to reglaze them, to clean them up and make repairs on the steel and to put a paint finish. But we're not going to put the jail bars back. We'll tag them with where they came out of, and they'll be set aside and possibly reinstalled at some future time, but not in this current phase. And I think that'll depend in the future how those upper floors get to be used. But we won't throw them away. We'll keep that material and just mark it. We've got window numbers for everything, so we can just store it and come back to that in the future. Right now, the schedule for the project, once we have the information from our materials testing, I think we'll be able to bid the project in mid to late January of next year. We think it'll be about a 12-month construction time once the contractor gets started. Also at this point, we have gone back through the project estimate, and I'll circulate this. Right now, including a contingency, and we still have some open line items that we're working on from window suppliers, but we're at $5.8 million. And I think previously we were talking about 5.5. So I think we're still in a manageable range. And again, that includes a 10% contingency as well. So I think we're moving along pretty well. In fact, things will be completed pretty rapidly once we get our materials testing information.
Your estimate of 5.8 million, that's for the entire building, right?
Yes.
Exterior.
And masonry and windows, top to bottom.
Okay. And just for the court's benefit, what was the figure doing it separately if you add those two together? Or is that what this 5.8 represents? You know, where we're going to do the upper floors and then we're going to do the lower floors on two separate?
That scenario, I think, was about a 6.3 because there was escalation involved in that second phase.
So this still has potential to save the county taxpayers several $100,000?
By doing this in one phase rather than two, okay. Yes, there's
considerable
savings.
I just want to make sure that we were
savings.
Still on target. That was the whole purpose of
yes.
doing it for under one phase instead of several, was to try to, you know, save some money on the project. Okay.
Yes, I think that is still tracking pretty well. And as we near the completion of the drawings, we will update that estimate. As we would normally do. I think after the cleaning crew is finished this morning, it should be a striking difference, particularly on the sandstone. the little piece they did just a few minutes ago, looks like that. I mean, this is the rock in its natural state. It's fairly bright. But again, I think the importance of getting the same stuff back in place is that it's going to weather along with the rest of the building and be consistent.
You're talking about just spot repairs? Is there like a whole face of the courthouse and places that's going to have to be replaced, or we're just talking about blocks?
On the basement level, it's some individual blocks that have either cracked or have so much spalling that the block is weakened. Most of the sandstone work actually is up on the tower section in the spandrels between the windows floor to floor, where the material is about 1 inch thick. And there's much more of this flaking or delaminating happening with those thinner pieces up on the tower. So actually most of our square footage of replacement is on the tower section rather than on the basement.
And is this something that can be expected to continue to weather and deteriorate over the years? I mean, I guess where I'm going is this, we need to submit in the specs to maybe get X number of extra spare blocks, you know, so we'll have some for future damages so we don't have to go through this ordeal again. I mean, I know you'd love to go to Colorado, yeah. But, you know.
Actually, it's the first time, but yeah, it was good. That definitely is a good approach to have an attic stock. I think another way is that the thin pieces on the tower seem to have been cut in a different direction through the stone than the blocks on the basement, which is why the grain of the stone is separating like this into these thin sheets. I think being able at this point to work with a larger original block and to be able to hand pick these blocks. I mean, you can see on this piece that there is not the kind of grain there that creates that kind of spalling. And so if we can better select the pieces that are used in those areas so that we don't have that kind of a grain or layering happening, then we can hopefully forestall some of that kind of weathering in the future. But yes, I think it would be, because the material is ridiculously cheap. I mean, why not have a few of these out in your yard that would be at hand sometime when we're all gone, that somebody else could figure it out and put them up there.
How old is the stone that's on this building now?
1930. So almost 80 years old.
So what type of, and that's with no type of maintenance over a period of time other than washing?
Well, we're not clear on the cleaning history. The building probably has been cleaned at least once, if not twice, in its history. Not a whole lot. It's pretty good, particularly considering the climate. And it's probably the coastal climate and the industry nearby that has affected this softer stonework the most. The brick has almost no erosion from the climate being much harder. And the limestone is somewhere in the middle. The sandstone has been the most fragile material. I'll pass these pictures around. You can compare with the chips off the building. You did?
He's a well-known name here.
Yeah, it's not great, but it's curious.
Richest person in this area. No.
What?
I think
Fiddler, do y'all have any historical information on this benefactor, potential benefactor may have, other than what he's responded? That's pretty much all we got. Okay.
What was that Yount fellow's first name?
His name was Miles Frank Yount, Y-O-U-N-T. And it was really just kind of a casual reference in something that we saw during the master plan. It might have been Commissioner's Court minutes that the sandstone had come from his quarry in Manitou Springs. And so that was just kind of the Google search that kind of led us to this material. We know also from the records that the terracotta was provided out of Denver, which was kind of a hotbed of terracotta work in the early 20th century, because it was cheaper to do a fairly ornate building out of terracotta than it was out of cut granite or cut limestone. So that might have been another connection that he had from that area, bringing materials to the courthouse. So these little clues are tantalizing sometimes.
A lot of red. Oh.
Yeah, well, at least this one, the hole had a bottom.
65% complete. What's your timeline? You said, do you have everything else ready to bid sometime in mid to late January?
Yes. I think most of our documentation on the building itself has been done. Most of the drawings are at least there in large part. What we are gathering now, the material sampling, will be the final bit of information so we can flesh it out.
Okay.
I think after the first of the year, we'll start querying some contractors too and start to build up a bid list and some interest in the project.
And you may have said this, and I may have dismissed it. I was kind of reading some of the stuff earlier, but the jail bars, windows for the jail, the bars will be removed and stored. And that, since they were added, I guess, after the original construction, there's no issues with the Historical Commission having those removed, or has that already been blessed?
Well, frankly, that's a piece of the argument that we've not thrown at them.
Okay.
Yeah, we know that the jail floors were built out at different intervals. They were not all built out when the building was first finished. I think if we can get their agreement just to be able now to remove them and set them aside, that we don't need to complicate it with.
Okay. I agree. I just want to make.
The floor is built for a jail?
Oh, yes. They were.
It was just expanded as needed.
Yeah, they were roughed in for that purpose. But the jail cells were not put in all at once. In fact, some of the original drawings that we have are separate sheets in later years that show those floors being developed as the need came, or as funding was available, whatever.
Very good. If I remember correctly, I can remember reading somewhere that bond issue had not been passed publicly.
I think it was more a sense of building a building that would provide for the county's growth in needs, because also everything within the building itself and the courtroom space was not built out originally. And I don't remember now the name of the court, but on the north side, on the second floor, just before you go into the annex, on the east side, there's a courtroom that was not built out until the 1950s. That was just left as shell space to be built out as needed. There's a smaller courtroom across the hall to the south of the fairly nice one, which is much plainer, which was also built out a little bit later than the original building. So it was not all intended to be occupied at once. There's several places around the building that were left basically unfinished and were moved into over time.
County courts of law were created second.
Well, originally those district courts would have held both civil and criminal cases, where that's more segregated today.
As we start with the next phase, 4 through whatever, for interior restoration and refurbishment, there was some discussion back quite a while ago regarding how we should go about that in phases. And you may or may not be prepared to discuss it, but we've got some considerations we're going to be faced with here in the near future about whether or not to give up a rather large building that the county currently owns that is and has been for sale. The bids have closed. We've got a bid on it. But since time has passed and we may be able to move up our time schedule with external financing for to go ahead and do this project a little quicker than originally planned, there's going to be a need for office space to relocate county offices beyond outside of this building for during the restoration period, potentially or possibly, to avoid problems. Any comments on that as to your recommendation of how we can best accomplish that, and whether the 66,000 square foot building that's currently up for sale should be retained for another year or two to, you know, to use for our restoration project, or from a cost standpoint, or consider, you know, trying to find scattered lease space around the downtown area and other places that to move these different offices to.
Well, obviously, the longer this project takes, the more it's going to cost from escalation, even though that's slowed down somewhat in the current economic climate. It is still there. And frankly, I think in Houston and maybe here somewhat as well, the things are not as badly hit as other parts of the country. But going back to some numbers that we had provided to you all in September, we see most immediately two possible phases to follow the exterior masonry and windows. One could be interior work that deals with a couple of these courtrooms, with the finish damage which we have from our lively insects, and another is to get a handle on the mechanical and electrical systems throughout the building, because obviously once we have the moisture from the exterior controlled, the next logical step, I think, would be to work on the air conditioning system, and to get it brought up to date so that you can have energy efficiency, humidity control, temperature control, and a more logical zoning throughout the building. These numbers that we had presented before, the air conditioning and some electrical and some plumbing, was about a $3.7 million project, and the courtroom restoration for this courtroom and the old district court on the second floor, not including that mechanical part, was maybe about $150,000. So starting the interior is not that big an issue. One of spread that around. So I think we've already kind of got a couple little packages in the wings. As soon as they can be funded, they can be started. It might almost be possible, if it makes sense to you all, to start on the air conditioning design work and package it with this exterior work, to do that all at one time and to try to consolidate the schedule and have some savings there.
Well, the dilemma we're faced with is whether or not we go ahead and try to sell the asset that the county owns or utilize it for the next, you know, maybe hold on to it for another year, then it should be more than adequate to handle most of the departments mm-hmm. that would need to be moved out.
Well,
and
I think
if this was done like at two or three or even four floors at a time, you know, and move those folks into one building and then do all the interior restoration has to be done during that period and then move them back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there should be some advantages to be able to do that from a construction standpoint and
well, definitely there would be
cost savings.
What I don't have along with this is something that looks at the total of all the other interior, basically finish work, the various materials and things to be restored beyond these two courtrooms. But something like doing the air conditioning and the electrical system really needs to be, to begin with, at least designed for the whole building so that everything ultimately works together. Now that could certainly be, once that background is done, it could be packaged in multi-floor layers, perhaps, or bid as an entire package of the air conditioning plus the interior work that obviously would have to be done in stages just to manage the county operations and the people. That would be similar to a project that we're nearly finished with at the State Archives building in Austin, which is, you know, it has all the state treasures, and nobody moved out of the building. Nothing was taken out of the building, but it has a completely new air conditioning system, completely new electrical. The lower three public floors were completely renovated, but it's just shifting people up and down, sideways, backwards.
See, our problem, we don't have any vacant space in the building currently to shift people.
That's right. You have to create a flex zone somewhere.
Yeah.
To be able to
do
that.
We don't have a lot of extra space.
But there's maybe two ways to do it. One is to look at it all together, or to go back. The second way would be to go back to some of these stages and do the air conditioning maybe as the next step, and then do the interior materials as a succeeding step.
I just want to see if you had any thoughts on dealing with this in other jurisdictions as to what the best possible scenario was, because I mean, we're talking about a...
Well, certainly as a courthouse goes, this is one of the biggest, so it's something of a different animal than Wharton or mm-hmm. B County or Liberty or some other of the other ones that we've worked on. But we have done similar things in other types of buildings.
I think I know the answer, but is it at all practical to convert some of those jail floors to office space or a crime lab or some facility like that?
Well, yes. I mean, they're usable. The main issue with those floors is that the floor-to-floor height is fairly short, which means that it's difficult to get a dropped ceiling with the ductwork above it. So it would need to be something of a different kind of treatment where there might be an exposed structure with the ductwork and the mechanical services for that floor in the middle kind of feeding out through the walls, but trying to keep the occupied space around the perimeter tall.
Is it practical to use one floor as a mechanical floor, an office floor, then a mechanical floor, and an office floor, and a mechanical floor?
And that's sort of what is there right now. The eighth floor is the mechanical space for the floors from 7 to 5. And the third floor of this building has the mechanical spaces for 3, 4, and 2. So that kind of layering definitely could happen as we go up. And of course, the master plan does anticipate air conditioning all the way up, even if it is just storage, because those materials need air quality control as well. But there's a couple ways to do it, either as a donut operation with the mechanical in the middle, or to layer it, as you say.
About how many square feet are those floors? Are they relatively all the same?
Oh, gee. Well, yeah, once you get up from 5 on up, they're all pretty much the same.
They're small in comparison.
Do you remember what that is? I'm gonna stick my neck out and say about 4,000 square feet.
Oh, that's all?
Yeah, they're not big. I think the footprint is roughly 60 feet square up there. Hmm. And then, of course, you got elevators, stairs, service stuff going up the middle. So you've got a core happening. So
they have 2,500.
Yeah.
Too much. Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you very much, Gerald.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good report.
Wearing you out.
Yeah. Okay, we're out of here.